Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC AM and FM and WNYC.org. We've been talking about the middle class in Russia and the pressure it's creating for a more democratic government. Now let's talk about the middle class in Latin America and what it has to say about rising inequalities in the United States. Joining me to parse this out is NYU professor Jorge Castañeda. He wrote an op-ed piece in this Sunday's New York Times. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Andrea. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Professor, the indicators all point to rising inequality in the U.S., but are we really about to lose the middle class?
Oh, I think that would be perhaps going a bit too far. It's not that the United States is losing its middle class, but what does seem to be the case from all of the numbers many American experts have been poring over for the last 30 years is that since 1980, and then more specifically since the crisis of 2008, income inequality, wealth inequality, inequality of opportunities has gone up in the United States, and the middle class has begun to shrink. And this is something that had not happened before in the United States, and it contrasts precisely with what has been happening in Latin America the last 10 years or 15 years, where the middle class has begun to grow. So I think, and that's the point I try to make in this op-ed piece, Andrea, in the Times, I think that the United States should glance at least southwards and see, one, what countries with a small middle class used to look like. It's not a nice sight. Countries with small middle classes and huge inequality become more violent, more crime prone, more lack of social cohesion, more social tensions. If you can avoid it, it's a good idea.
Now, let's sort of tease this out a little bit. Why is it that the U.S. and Latin America, you know, which in some ways share a lot, you know, sort of development at the same time in history and, you know, some cases geography, why is it that Latin America didn't develop a middle class and the U.S. did?
Well, for many historical reasons, among others, of course, the fundamental one perhaps is that Latin America, or what we call Latin America today, was a place which was conquered. And either where it was conquered, the people who were conquered 5 centuries ago were transformed into slaves or dominated, oppressed peoples, or they were exterminated, they were decimated. That's where there were civilizations, what we call Mexico today, what we call Peru today, what we call Bolivia, Ecuador today. Or in other places, there were not really sedentary, structured civilizations, and there was nothing to conquer, but then you had an enormous amount of slaves, for example, who were brought from Africa, as the case of Brazil. None of that happened in the United States. The United States sort of started off on a much more equal footing. This is the sort of thing that made impressed Tocqueville so much when he came to the United States in the 1830s and 40s. And saw a country which already then, almost 200 years ago, was very different from Europe because it had that middle class even then. Latin America only began to have a small middle class from 1950s onward, and it's only the last 10 years or so that in some countries of Latin America, the middle class has become a majority of the population.
My guest is Jorge Castañeda, professor of politics and Latin American and Caribbean studies at NYU. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Callers, do you consider yourself middle class? 212-433-WNYC. Do you think you're in danger? Why? I am also particularly interested in hearing from people who are from Latin America, maybe listening in Latin America, or maybe are here temporarily or more permanently. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I'd like to hear from you on how you, what you think the consequences of having a relatively small middle class were in Latin America. And I'm going to ask that same question to Jorge Castañeda. You said it wasn't pretty. Can you elaborate?
Well, we still have in Latin America the most unequal societies in fact, in the world. There are many places in the world that are poorer than most of the Latin American countries, but that very few or none, actually, that are so unequal, where the richest 1% or 5% or 10% has a much larger share of national income than in any other country or than all countries in the world, and where the poorest 50%, let's say, have, or 40%, have a smaller share of national income than anywhere. When you have that sort of situation, you can see the inequality. You don't see a whole bunch of people living more or less the same. You see some people living fabulously well, extraordinarily well, and you see an enormous amount of people living very poorly. That sight generates, logically enough, tension, resentment, anger, crime, violence, all of these ills which have plagued Latin America for many, many years and still do, although this middle class in Latin America has finally begun to grow and has finally become a majority of the population.
Why is that? What's fueling the development of the middle class?
Latin America has experienced over, or more, many countries, not all of them, the last 15 years or so, a lot of macroeconomic stability. No inflation, low interest rates, sound public finances, democratic rule, and all of these things together have generated the possibility of people having access to credit, being able to purchase homes with mortgages at low interest rates, being able to purchase cars, also automobile loans at low interest rates, no inflation, people being able to find jobs. Latin America has become, or not all of it, but a large part of it, South America, has become a huge commodity exporter to China and to India, generating enormous amounts of surpluses, which are then distributed more or less effectively to the population, because you have democratic governments, you've had good democratic governments in countries like Brazil, like Chile, like Colombia now, to a lesser extent in Peru and in Argentina. And so all of this money distributed through democratic methods by competent governments and macroeconomic stability, whereby inflation doesn't eat it all up, has led to this expansion of the middle class. And it has really changed many, many countries in Latin America from what they used to be to what they are now.
I was in Colombia this summer, and I did notice that, you know, and even though things are clearly changing, there still is this legacy of sort of lack of public institutions. So that sort of feeds on itself. So that if you live in one part and you want to get to another part, you have the means, you'll just sort of drive, which means that you don't really interact with everybody else. And then you don't necessarily create a sense of social cohesion because the opportunities for mixing are few. I mean, I could see it changing, but it also was striking coming from, you know, New York, where people ride the subways together and they go to school together and they are in the parks together, to have a really sort of different feeling of, you know, what the whole society was.
Well, you're absolutely right. And as a matter of fact, Colombia is one of the countries which, despite a lot of progress in recent years, is still lagging behind countries like Mexico, like Brazil, like Chile, like Uruguay, Costa Rica, in terms of building that middle class. Colombia is still a country where that looks a bit more like what Latin America used to look like. As you say, people either very affluent, very prosperous, and living their own lives alone, and the rest, people not prosperous enough to even move from one place to the other in the country. And the absence, this generates an absence of collective action, collective space, collective transportation, if you want to call it that, whatever. It does generate all of that.
We have a few people calling in who want to get into this discussion. Joe from Manhattan, hi, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my call. And I also am really delighted you're interviewing Jorge Castaneda, and he's a very distinguished person. And I've read his books over the year and know his work. In fact, I interviewed him several times when I was working as an NBC News producer years ago. And I've lived in Brazil, and I have lived in Mexico part-time, and I'm very much interested in what he's saying and making this comparison and what's happening to our own middle class in this country with the erosion of wealth and the capacity to live an independent, free-thinking, developing life. I'm very, 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 very concerned, especially for young people who come out of college with incredible debt and no capacity to pay it off. I want to just talk to Dr. Castaneda about a conversation I had in Mexico a few weeks ago with a young Mexican. And he was we were talking about the upcoming election. President Calderon is ending his term in a few months, and the Mexican elections will happen in next year, as ours will. And I asked this young man if he would be supporting the PAN, which is the party that Calderon is in, or the PRI, which is the party that was turned out of power after 50 or 60 years. And he said he would be supporting the PAN. And I said, why is that? He said, because I come from a rural, a formerly poor family. We're doing okay. We're doing better, and I'm going to college. And he said, the only way I could have done that is because of a scholarship, and that only happened because of the PAN. So I'm very worried. It was a very interesting conversation, and I'm concerned about what's going to happen in this election and whether or not the PRI will return to power, which many Mexicans now support because of their concern about the violence and criminality in the war that Calderon is waging against the cartels, or whether we'll go back to a PRI which made its deals with the cartels.
So let me sort of see if I can distill that into a question for Dr. Castaneda. And let me just sort of also ask, you were saying, okay, Mexico has a rising middle class. Rising middle classes create social stability. And yet, in some ways, the opposite seems to be happening in Mexico.
Are you back to me, Andrea?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, again, I think what our caller was saying is absolutely true. I mean, there a lot of progress has been made in Mexico the last 10 years. And actually, I would add on the 5 years since 1996 that former President Cedillo, who was from the PRI, was president between 96 and 2000. People have had access to scholarships to go to college. They've had access to credit to buy a house. They've had access to more income to go on vacation. All of that has changed Mexico enormously, but there are a lot of people today in Mexico who are not happy with the drug war, with the violence that has erupted in Mexico, with the rise in lack of security, violence, crime, etc. And that may lead people to vote for the PRI candidate again and elect the pre-president after 12 years or two terms of two PAN presidents. I would prefer the PAN to stay in power, but I can see the logic of people wanting to go back to pre-governments, but that doesn't mean that the way they used to govern will return, because they will have to be governing a country that has now a democratic political system, that has transparency, that has accountability, and mainly they will have to govern a country that now has a large middle class, partly as a result of their doing, partly as a result of the PAN's doing. So even if they win, it won't really be a return to the past, because the country has changed so much.
I know that you have to go, but do you have time for one more call?
We'll take one more.
Okay. Let's go to Victoria from Manhattan. Hi, Victoria. You're on WNYC.
Hi, and hi, Dr. Castaneda. I'm from New York, but I grew up in Mexico City. And I always hoped that things would get better in Mexico, because I think you were brought up by the PRI, which told you that it would, and things have. But what I see now is that the United States is getting a kind of low, poor class that people cannot get out of, and that to me is very, very frightening. I wonder if you could comment on that. And I wish you had become president.
Well, I do too.
Thank you.
I am concerned about what's happening in the United States, precisely because I'm so familiar not only with Mexico but with other countries in Latin America, which the United States is not yet a copy of, obviously. But, it's also important to remember the Europeans have this enormous and so far very successful expensive welfare state, which ensures that even if you're not middle class at the outset, at the get-go, the welfare state ensures a certain amount of equality and a certain amount of cohesion, which may not be present in society when you start off, but you eventually get there. The United States never had that welfare state like the Europeans have. It has something, of course, but not as much as the Europeans, because people were, this was a much more egalitarian society from the outset. You didn't need the corrections of the welfare state in order to make it egalitarian. It was. If now you turn the United States into a more unequal society and you don't have the European welfare state to correct that inequality, you can be running a lot of risks here. You can be messing with, fooling around with dangerous policies, because it's not the same thing to have an unequal society and no welfare state. We know that in Latin America, and it's not a good thing.
So, in fact, you're saying that, you know, I mean, there's this debate going on in Congress. We were talking about it on the show earlier about, you know, who do you tax, who do you not tax. The Republicans have argued that if you tax the super rich, you are in danger of thwarting your own economic growth. But you're, in fact, arguing the opposite, that if you don't, you're in danger of thwarting your own economic growth.
I think it is a huge danger, and I hope American elites are able to reach agreement on some of these things that they have to do over the next 4 or 5 years so that they don't dismantle what there is of a welfare state here and they don't continue to transform American society into a more unequal society, because, as I say, we've been there. We know what it's like, and it's not nice.
And we will have to end it there. Thank you so much, Dr.
Thank
Jorge Castañeda, Professor of Politics in Latin America and Caribbean Studies at NYU. Thanks so much for joining us. When we come back, we'll take your stories of falling asleep on the subway.